sunshine and only 75.
Portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Portions of this program may be pre-recorded.
Colonel Mike, you're live.
Yes, I get about an average of those 25 a day between morning, afternoon, and night. But the reason, John, I called this morning, you talk about Roberts. A mutual friend of ours called me yesterday and said, you know, people were really excited about this guy, but they forgot the confirmation hearings, and I'll go pull it up and I'll get you the script. But, you know, back then he had a couple of questions on his confirmation, and they asked him, it was a controversial case. And they asked him, you know, why did you take a case like that? And he said, well, you know, the money was good. I took it on that way because they paid. So, you know, he was a paid hack before he was a Supreme Court justice. Mm-hmm. But the other thing about this guy, nobody should be let down because they knew his position, is, John, this guy, he's in charge of the FISA court. Nobody remembers this. The FISA court has been the biggest problem for 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. And John Roberts' name never comes up. It's like saying Carvel Ice Cream and you forgot to mention the owner, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Tom Carvel. Oh, man, does that bring back memories? Oh, yeah. My God. That's like from the 60s.
What was the whale's name? Do you remember the whale's name?
No, but Tom Carvel. Yeah. That's right. Growing up as a kid, Carvel Ice Cream. I don't even know I've not seen one in 30 years.
No, you can only get the Carvel cakes now. They're in the stores, but there's no Carvel. There's
Carvel Ice Cream stores. And the guy that did the ads on TV, this is back in the 60s.
Mustache. Yeah, the big mustache. He looked like the Greek diner guy.
Yeah, Tom Carvel.
Tom Carvel. Something the Whale, Willie the Whale. They had all these things for kids, you know, these molds. But, it's like saying, you know, Tom Carvel Ice Cream never mentioned Tom. You say the FISA court, nobody even says, you know, John Roberts. So when you say Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, in my mind, I'm saying FISA court. Anybody remember the FISA court? It's only been 4 years in the making, right?
Right.
So, if Trump fires the guy now, the head of the FBI, it's going to be controversial. If he fires him the day after the election, it doesn't matter. You know, nothing's going to matter because they knew it. The guy, listen, he's right out of the episode of if the Sopranos was still running, Biden would be another episode of the Sopranos. You know, the corrupt politician. You know what I mean? Hey, you know, he's like, remember that cop in Casablanca when he went into the casino?
Right.
He blows the whistle.
Yeah.
Hey, there's gambling here, remember?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. The other thing, I'm gonna put a little sympathy, you know, for this kid that he has, the wacko. I think this guy might have went upside down and belly up, and on the drugs that he was on. I don't agree with all the wild stuff with the kids, but I think this guy might have went belly up from being pressured, you know, by giving the 10%. It's like the mob, John.
Right.
You know, you got to give me the 10%. And he's probably thinking like, oh, my gosh, what's going to be down the line if we get busted, right?
Right.
So, he cracked out. It could be that the guy went on the drugs because the old man pressured him for the money. Who knows? But anyway, ask Scott Taylor. He's a Navy SEAL. You can tell him about your special guest tomorrow. All right?
I will do it.
Bye-bye.
The John Frederick Show.
Joining us now, Stephen K. Bannon of War Room Pandemic, 10 to noon, John Frederick's Radio Network, Monday to Saturday, also on AVN Live, The Dish Channel 219, Newsmax, 11 to midnight. Steve, great to have you, man. I was excited to have you on today especially. Thank you.
Always an honor, John, and thank you. Tomorrow, John Frederick, is a pretty important day. You know what tomorrow is?
What?
The one-year anniversary of the starting of the War Room on the John Frederick Radio Network. 1 year ago tomorrow.
No kidding.
We launched 1 year tomorrow. Producer Dan told me yesterday we're going to do a very special show tomorrow. I think we may have a very special co-host that we're going to have ask you to join us, and we're going to really kick it off. War Room Impeachment started 1 year ago tomorrow, and the show has metastasized become, I think, it's the biggest show in the world.
That's the biggest show in the world. Yeah. Look, there is no question. And it was visionary what you and I did back. And I remember, and just to give, I don't want to eat up time here, but Steve and I talked on a Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. Exactly. It was just before one of the football games came on. We talked at like 12:30. And in one day, on Tuesday, right? That was 48 hours.
Yeah.
We had a radio show going live across the nation, set up in at the embassy there, the Breitbart embassy.
You produced the whole entire thing. Your Richmond team was amazing. We launched it within 24 hours.
24 hours we launched it.
And you know, and Brian Kolfage, this nonsense with the Southern District of New York, the reason we could launch nationally is because all the work Brian Kolfage had done for me. They basically provide a platform that I had at Breitbart that we needed, much smaller, but we were able to launch a national show with the John Frederick Radio Network and what we had done on Facebook and other things, able to launch it in that tiny show, right, with the content. It's all about content.
Yeah, the content is king. And we set up I drove to Richmond because I was at home that day in Virginia Beach. I drove to Richmond. I scoured up whatever microphones and other loose equipment I had. Then I went to my studio in Washington. I took stuff out of there. I piecemealed the whole thing together, put the network in. We got the internet up in one day, and that was all done on Monday. We did a test on Monday, and then Tuesday at 10, at 9 a.m., Tuesday at 9 a.m., we went live. That's pretty good.
No, it just shows you what an entrepreneur you are. But listen, this is, you know, and we never would never thought that, you know, 2 weeks out, because we're 2 weeks out from game day, that this, you know, your Deplorables channel, which you've become, I think, the best. I tell people, if you want to see all over the world, journalists call me and say, if you want to see what the Deplorables are thinking, listen to John Fredericks and listen to his callers.
Thank you.
Because that's what the Breitbart radio used to be. I said, John Fredericks has got it. He's got his hand on the pulse. And just listen to it. And I got to tell you, I've never had a foreign journalist, I've never had a national journalist come back and say, I think you're wrong. Everybody says it's amazing. If you want, because you get all the kind of misdirection plays by the mainstream media. If you want to hear what people are thinking about, want to hear where they are. And look, here's what I think is important today. Joe Biden peaked 3 weeks too early, and now he's in the witness protection program. Why is he in the witness protection program? Because we dropped these emails on him at the exactly perfect time where he could not. Now, if we'd had the debate last week, it'd have been more perfect, but be that as it may, these things they've traumatized the Biden campaign. He is now in a witness protection program. Okay, he is traumatized. They can't respond to it. They're letting their media Praetorian guard out there saying it's Russian ops. Everybody knows that's nonsense. That's fading away even as we speak. They're going to have to confront more emails. They're going to confront emails from other people. We're going to have Matthew Turman on today, who's a fabulous investigative journalist, been working with Peter Schweitzer and Jack Posobiec over One America. They have a trove of 26,000 emails in a guy that is, I think his name's Devin Cooney, who's a former business partner, Hunter Biden, who's flipped, right, completely flipped. Turman's been talking to him in federal prison, I think, for the last couple of years. This guy's coming out with, he's going to be on the show today. There's all types of new documents out here. Off of the hard drive, you're going to see media companies coming out with stories in the next 24 to 48 hours before the debate on Thursday that show that these guys are having meetings and in business with the Chinese Communist Party, intelligence assets, intelligence operatives. This is not about a drug problem or a wayward son. This is about a father who knowingly allowed this to happen and was part of it. Okay, Joe Biden has to answer these questions, not Hunter Biden. People don't care about Hunter Biden. People care about Joe Biden. Joe Biden wants to be commander-in-chief. Joe Biden wants to be the chief magistrate of the United States. Joe Biden wants to be president of the United States. He is going to have to stand and deliver on Thursday night in front of the whole nation with Donald Trump beating him about the head and shoulders about this. He's going to have to answer every one of these emails, every one of these allegations, and he better be on point. I got to tell you, unlike Hillary Clinton, who I always called a hard target, right, he's a soft target. Hillary Clinton, whether you like her or hate her, had been through 20 years of the right all over her, okay? She was ready. She was game ready, and she couldn't even take the withering fire we put on her, okay? Joe Biden is soft. He's never been touched in 47 years, right? He's up in Delaware and never really had an opponent. In the Obama years, it was President Obama taking the heat, not Joe Biden. Joe Biden is glad, he's a glad hander, right? Right now, for the first time in his life, with 3 weeks to go in a presidential campaign, he's getting the withering fire that the right can put on him with documents, with information that he's not prepared. His campaign staff has been a disaster. They kept put him on TV on Sunday. This reporter or this host for Fox Sunday, it's a master class. He teaches a master class in how to not let people spin, but ask direct questions and not let them off the hook. The young woman's on there, completely melts down, basically says, yes, the emails are authentic, right? They've pulled her from TV. She's going to be on the bench until after the campaign. But you're seeing they peaked, and Trump is starting to surge. And let me be very specific. Politico's got a story today about Corey and Bossie and some other guys helping out on 16. It's fine. But that's not – what's relevant is the buried lead about 10 paragraphs down, Bob Poduchek, who has ran Ohio for us in 16, knows Ohio better than anybody, was the guy that was the first guy to tell me, you don't need to come back, we got this. When Poduchek tells it, you can take that to the bank and cash it, okay? He's saying right now you don't need to come back to Ohio, okay? This is so important. What Trump is doing, he's now surging in the areas of the states you need to surge in. He's surging in Florida. He's surging in Pennsylvania. And where the Biden campaign is not is structurally not set up to actually run a campaign. They're running a 1996 model where you buy a bunch of TV advertising. It was Van Jones last night on CNN laid it out. Van Jones is a smart guy, whether you like him or not. Beside the point, he's a smart guy. He walked through the entire analysis, and he gets down to the fact that this is about low-propensity voters and this is about touch points. They're low-propensity voters for a reason. You got to go get them and get them to the polls, right? You can't persuade
them to
the polls.
That's
it's a ground game. It's why is Stepien is not running this campaign because of chance. When it was determined that Brad needed to step aside back in June, I was the biggest advocate of saying, because people had come to me, some of the donors, I said, no, I got other stuff I got to do that you'll see all come to fruition. I said, but the guy you got to pick Bill Stepien, and you throw in a Jason Miller and a Greg Manns and a Steve Cortez and a couple other guys. You got a team. That's your team. Because this is all going to come down in the weeks leading up to this, to ground game in areas like certain areas of Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio, Michigan, even Arizona. And so this is what you're seeing now. This is the media's got to blame themselves. Their hysteria uncovering the pandemic led to being traumatized, not just traumatized their voters. It traumatized their entire apparatus. They can't put together, and you heard Ralph Reed on our show on Monday. Why did I have Ralph Reed on there? Ralph Reed is one of the most sophisticated operatives in all of Republican politics.
Right.
And he's also a guy, the first time I met him, he said, it's all about ground game. It's all about voter contact. It's a lesson that Obama learned in 08 and 12. Mm-hmm. The Tea Party in 10, Obama in 8 and 12. And you had in 18, the reason we got smoked in 18, the left understood you had to take the Tea Party thing and go knock on doors. They're not knocking on doors. They don't have a ground game to go do that. The people are smart. They're telling them that's why the Biden campaign came out this weekend. Said, don't believe the polls. This polling is basically irrelevant right now. People shouldn't focus on it and don't worry about it. The only thing that's relevant is knocking on doors and getting people to go vote. Mm-hmm. That is what's going to determine this is low propensity voters. And you saw last night a little bit of the fear in a guy like Van Jones, a smart guy. I think they feel this could slip away from them. And it's going to slip away from them.
Yeah, they're feeling it.
Look, if we put Arizona in Florida with Ohio, then it all comes down to Pennsylvania, Michigan, or Wisconsin. All you need is one. We don't need – and I keep telling people, we don't need 306 electoral votes. It was great that we had that.
We need 270.
You need 270, right? We need 270. And that's – you need a path to 270 right now. And here's the thing. At the very moment that Joe Biden has to be out making the case to the American people, because they're not watching MSNBC and CNN, they're covering nonstop. That's as close to being irrelevant as possible. They're not watching that, okay? They're watching local news. And if you're not on local news there, right, You're not getting covered. Joe Biden needs to be in these areas in local news, and he's in the witness protection program for the five most important days. What is he doing? Studying more policy? Is he getting more details about the Green New Deal?
No, he doesn't want to answer the questions.
It's all irrelevant. Nobody cares about his tax plan. I think that's all junk anyway. He doesn't even want to talk about it. He came three sentences into it. He's forgotten what he's talking about. The reason they have him in hiding during the absolute days he should be out there in person is they can't even take a compliant media. CBS, the guy at CBS ask a basic question every time. He just asks a simple question. Hey, can you validate the emails? It's simple. It's not. He's not trying to get in this guy's face. Joe Biden, I knew you were going to ask that. You're nothing but a smear merchant. Hey, Joe, note to self, it's CBS, okay? It's the biggest cheerleader you have. Right, it's the guys that did 60 Minutes with Fauci. Let Fauci beat up the president.
The follow-up,
they become a smear merchant, when you treat them like Breitbart,
right,
that shows you they're not ready. This is the thing, and this is why Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, this is your responsibility. You failed to do this. Bernie Sanders, again, failed to bring the heat in a primary, and so did Elizabeth Warren. All of this should have come out. You should have been all over this China stuff. It was out there. You didn't need the emails to know in the community that he was out there selling access to his father, to the Chinese Communist Party. It was an open secret. People knew it. And I got to tell you, Tony Blinken knew it. Kirk Campbell knew it. Jake Sullivan knew it. The guys all sitting there going, oh, they want to be in charge of China policy. They all knew it. This was an open secret. The media just hit the New York Times. Just had the CNN should put the K file on this. You put the file on this, or the Washington Post. You put Tom Hamburger on this. All the information had been out a year ago, and Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren would have been the nominee. Okay, so the populist left. You brought this on yourself. Once again, you had a pillow fight. Okay, not a knife fight. And these primaries should be knife fights. That's who the best guy wins. They should be dart winning, and they're not in the Democratic Party. Once again, you have a guy. He's not ready for prime time. He's soft. And the people around him are soft. And now you're going to be put in the cauldron of heat, okay? And he's not going to be able to withstand it. It's the tell he's not being able to withstand it. He's completely gone radio silent, except for, he had his granddaughter for a milkshake on Sunday. Ladies and gentlemen, put that in your – remember that moment. Okay? That's another tell. Don't want to get into too much detail right now, but that's a tell. Why does Joe Biden finally suddenly show up with the granddaughter to go get a milkshake? The one media veil he has is going to get a milkshake with the granddaughter. Please put a pin in that, okay? And by the way, what are the questions that the media are asking? What flavor?
They ask them what flavor.
This is going to be a seminal moment. They will teach that moment at Columbia Journalism School when they clean out that place. Okay,
right.
And really start teaching journalism in the years to come. But
what flavor did you get?
Duly note and put a pin in that, because that one's going to be replayed, I think, a couple of three times in the days ahead. This is the point. The point is Trump is surging, that Biden peaked too early, that this is going to come down to a couple of, just like in 16. This is going to come down to some targeted areas, and they can run they've got 10 times more money than Trump. The situation of the Trump money will be a discussion for another day. Okay.
Another day.
You don't need to worry about how we got here and how this
doesn't
happened.
Matter. You got 2 weeks. It's irrelevant.
Donald Trump is the greatest fundraiser in human history, and Kimberly Guilfoyle and these people have done. They are unbelievable. How we're out of money is and how he has to spend a day in California. Yeah. That's a topic for November 4th, okay,
right.
In the hot wash-up. Okay?
That's right.
But what is now is that it's not about money. It's about message, and it's about the individual. We got the greatest closer that's ever been. We were in worse shape coming out of Billy Bush.
That's right.
Okay, after we closed this thing up from the 14 points down, he was in August, Trump closed up. We were in worse shape coming out of Billy Bush. And the whole Republican establishment, Medea, here, they're standing. Some of them are standing back. Back then, they were fleeing. They were fleeing. Okay,
mm-hmm.
We're in better shape. I tell you, the vote on glorious ACB is critical. And you saw last night. This
yep.
is Roberts. And I've said this from time at the beginning. Roberts is a bad guy. Okay, every time it comes down to crunch time, he's going to side with the liberals.
Why does he side with the liberals?
Because he's a liberal. Because of Bush, another Bush, this another disaster of the Republican establishment not vetting somebody. You know, all three judges here were vetted, and what were they vetted on? Their writings. Okay, right. They were vetted on their writings. They were vetted on their opinions. They were vetted on things that really show who they are. Judges are about their opinions. Their opinions are in writing.
Right.
Frankfurter, Brandeis, all these guys. You go back, that's what Don McGahn and Leonard Leo, who essentially saved the whole thing on the judiciary because they were hammers on one thing. A judge lives in his writings, and that's where Glorious ACB, we need her on the court, and we need her now. You're going to have one disaster after the other with Roberts.
All right, Steve, let's get to the New York Post story. I've heard rumors all last night that another major news network is finally going to break the dam, the corral they put around the New York Post story, and blow it out of the ocean today. True or false?
Let's say this. There's mainstream media, you know, there's so much different information. You have this other 26,000 emails. You have affidavits from people. You have what's on the hard drive. You have a flood of information that's going to overwhelm the Bidens.
When's it come out?
You have mainstream media. Well, you have mainstream media that's working on something. It depends. Listen, don't think there's not pressure on these editors. Now, don't think there's not pressure from the Democratic Party and from other media and financial apparatus, the hedge funds, et cetera, saying, hey, Biden's going to win. You publish this stuff. We're taking names. We're going to remember this. The pressure on these companies, the pressure on them. But look, the lie that's in Mediaite, and Mediaite should be ashamed, it's a stone-cold lie. We never gave this. We never gave the hard drive, and we never approached Fox News at first. We approached one company with the hard drive. That was the New York Post. I did approach another company that's not Fox without the hard drive to talk about the timing, and they told me, quite frankly, they couldn't make the timing. Right. And so I didn't pursue it anymore. But it's a lie. Fox News never turned this down.
What made you go to the Post?
Because Rupert Murdoch and they're extremely smart management team. They got great lawyers. They got Rupert Murdoch. They know how to assess risk. I knew they could take a look at this thing. They got the technical expertise and they're a tabloid and they got steel cojones. Right. And I knew that someone like that was going to take the withering fire. They've broken a lot of tough stories over the years, right? Mm-hmm. This is a paper, although it's a tabloid. It's Alexander Hamilton's paper.
It's 180 years old.
It's one of the oldest papers it's the oldest major paper in the country. It's the top three or four papers in the country. It's read everywhere online globally, right? It's a perfect audience for this, and they also know how to do it. But listen, the Daily Mail has taken the lead here in taking all the stories and repurposing them and driving things. The traffic on the Daily Mail, which is the largest site in the world, has just that in the New York Post. People, the mainstream media and the Biden campaign don't think the story's getting out. They're absolutely stone cold wrong. And there is other mainstream media, I think, prepared to break the dam here with major exposés. And I think a lot of this is going to be regarding, guess what? Surprise, China. The Chinese situation and the Biden's involvement in China, whether it's the private equity fund, other relationships with Chinese Energy Corp, other joint ventures, other relationships with people that turned out to be either intelligence officers or intelligence assets that were playing the Bidens and the people around them. And I think you got to find out, you know, Tony Blinken in this email from the Schweitzer thing the other day is the guy that's setting up the meeting. You guys get Tony. And Tony Blinken now is unconfirmable, right? Unconfirmable because other information will come out. You got Blinken. You're going to have Kurt Campbell. You're going to have Jake Sullivan. All of his advisors should come forward immediately and just fess up to exactly what they knew and when they knew it. Because Biden's involvement with the Chinese Communist Party and he's being bought and paid for by the Chinese Communist Party. Look, essentially, he couldn't get a security clearance right now. I don't know why they haven't pulled a security clearance. I'd be very uncomfortable with what this guy's given, what they've been giving up.
When are we going to hear from the Wall Street Journal?
Just a random name. I can neither confirm nor deny. But let's say hopefully tomorrow.
Are we going to get a bombshell today, Steve?
You're going to get a bombshell. You're going to get a tease of a bombshell this afternoon, and you're going to get a bombshell tomorrow morning via Rudy Giuliani.
Stephen K. Bannon.
Totally separate than China.
Rudy Giuliani, we understand. We understand he'll be on our radio show tomorrow. So thank you.
Thursday. Trying to work it for Thursday.
Thursday. After the bombshell. No, the bombshell's Thursday. No. Today's the tease. Wednesday. Tomorrow's a bombshell. Giuliani, Thursday. Got it.
You can text. I got it.
Okay. Stephen K. Bannon. John Frederick's Radio Network. He'll be on at 10 a.m. Stay with us.
You're listening to The John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. on great radio stations across Virginia and online anytime at thejohnfrederickshow.com.
AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Jason Walker. Massive demonstrations throughout Baghdad, thousands of protesters taking to the streets to mark 1 year since mass anti-government demonstrations swept through Iraq. Police firing tear gas today to stop protesters from crossing bridges toward the green zone. At least 43 security forces have been hurt. Record figures, the number of people casting an early ballot in this presidential election now surpasses those who voted early during all of 2016. That's more than 58 million people voting with 9 days to go. Pacific Gas and Electric cutting power to tens of thousands of residents in California and planning for more outages to prevent the chance of wildfires. California bracing for a return of gusty winds. This is SRN News.
As life gets back to normal and we start heading back to work, don't leave your leftover stash of toilet paper exposed to rodents. Send them packing the most humane way with Plug-In Pest Free. G'day, I'm Scott from Plug-In Pest Free, the electromagnetic device that utilizes the active wiring in your home or business to keep rodents and pests away. 100% chemical-free and environmentally friendly. Just plug it in. It's that simple. My strongest performer, the Pro Unit, is good for most homes and small businesses up to 4,000 square feet. Now that's fair dinkum. Is your home or business protected? If not, order yours today at gopestfree.com. Use promo code SAVE20 for 20% off. That's gopestfree.com, promo code SAVE20. Gopestfree.com, promo code SAVE20. Don't spray and regret. Plug in.
How will the weather affect you? WBOB Weather.
Partly sunny today, a 30% rain chance and a high of 86. Tonight, partly cloudy, low 70. The last work week of October 2020, mostly sunny tomorrow, near 84. A mix of sun and clouds the rest of the week, a slight chance of showers. The daytime high in the middle 80s. Partly cloudy nights down to 72. Looking forward to Halloween. Saturday, it'll get cooler with sunshine and only 75.
This year marks the 63rd anniversary of Boger Shoes on Park Street in Jacksonville. In order for a family business to celebrate 63 years of serving their community, they must be doing something right. That something is good old-fashioned customer service. Boger Shoes has filled the footwear needs of thousands of customers in Northeast Florida for over six decades. Whether your shoe needs are running, walking, dress, casual, orthopedic, or diabetic, Boger Shoes has what you need. And for the month of October, Boger Shoes would like to recognize the professionals that literally make their living on their feet. So if you are a UPS employee, Amazon delivery person, FedEx worker, U.S. postal worker, or someone that works in our area hospitals, Boger Shoes will give you a 20% discount on your footwear purchases. Some restrictions apply. Boger's carries many popular brands like Birkenstock, Dansko, New Balance, Aerovon, Viotic, and many more. Also, Boger's employees will be wearing gloves and masks while serving you. Boger's thoughts and prayers are with this community during this difficult time. Boger Shoes, the answer for hurting feet.
WBOB adds another new and exciting show to our lineup.
My name is Charlie Kirk. I run the largest pro-American student organization in the country. The American way of life means you follow the law, you work hard, you honor God, you raise your kids with strong values, and you work to create a civil society.
Listen for Charlie Kirk every weekday starting at noon on AM 600 WBOB.
They don't call him the commander of common sense for nothing.
I'm not a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican National Committee. the Democrat National Committee, any campaign or anybody else. So I'm going to call it like I see it.
Guess who got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning?
Make sure to get your big boy pants on. No crybaby diapers.
There's no crying in baseball.
Here on the John Frederick Show.
Joining me now, last segment before Stephen K. Bannon, is Curtis Ellis. Curtis, Senior Policy Advisor, American First Policies. Great noted writer on the Virginia Star. Everybody loves him. And he's with us now. He was going to be in our panel, but he got a better offer, so he's staying in Washington. He could have come with us to Virginia Beach. We had a ball set up to be in our panel for election night, but no, we got an invite to go to Trump Hotel, so he's going there, rubbing elbows with the big guys and the million-dollar donors and eating hors d'oeuvres and caviar and champagne. No, he could have come to Virginia Beach in the Westin, but he told me and Dan Black, he said, hey, I got a better offer. See you later.
Oh, my
Thanks
God.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, but you know the weather's better in Virginia Beach, so I'm really going to miss that.
I mean, I'm still thinking I could talk you into coming, but I guess
if they called, you know, still an open, you know,
what
still
are you going to do in Washington? There's no action.
It's a ghost town.
They're not going to call anything, so you just got to sit
there. It's a frozen swamp. It's not just a swamp. It's a frozen swamp.
Yeah, you come with us to Virginia Beach. You got action.
Yeah,
you got
fun.
Yeah,
baby. It's where the action is.
We'll buy you dinner.
That's the best offer I've had all day.
I know, right? Get out of New York. Escape from New York.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still locked down here, you know, and New York is terrible.
Adrian texted in from Richmond. He says, what? Curtis isn't going? I was all fired up. He said, tell him to go to the nearest 7-Eleven, and he can buy the champagne there in the box.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
The box champagne.
Sounds
box.
Great.
It comes in a little box with a spigot.
Terrific.
Like, I wouldn't drink too much of it. Maybe,
what did we drink through your mask?
What is it that we drank in high school with the same age? We can say this. Was it like
Boone's Farm apple wine?
Boone's Farm. That's right. Boone's Farm.
Apple wine.
It was like 89 cents. Remember?
And there's Ripple and Bally High.
The wine. That's
Boone's
right.
Farm. That was Boone's it. That was. Apple wine. I think that's why Steve Jobs named his company Apple.
I mean, you would, Boone's Farm apple you would wine. Get such a hangover when you
drink.
Oh, my God. Stuff. And then there wasn't there Bartles and James? Does that ring a bell?
Oh, right. Yeah, that was a little later. That came later. Maybe it was. Yeah,
I remember
Bartles
Boone's
and James.
Farm.
Yeah.
And what was a beer we would get? I remember buying it was like the same thing, like a six-pack. Because back then, you drink at 18. I remember turning 18 and buying a six-pack of Iron City beer for like $1.89. Iron City beer. It was like Rheingold.
Rheingold.
Well, that was a step up. Ballantine. There was Ballantine, Rheingold, and Schaefer. And Schaefer was like, wow. And then there was Pabst. And then Pabst was like, well, that was a little, you know, that was a higher end Iron
Pabst,
City beer.
Schlitz.
Rheingold, Budweiser, there's still Budweiser. Rheingold, Schaefer, these are all the New York beers, right?
Right, and then there was Old Something. I can't remember what that was.
And there was Ballantine.
It was like a dollar a six-pack.
Yeah,
anyway, so you were playing Smoke on the Water. The other day I woke up, I had to hear Ziggy Stardust. So I put...
No kidding!
Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. I put the CD on. I had to hear it. 1972?
Yes.
That was a good one.
Yes. What was yep.
And I was just reading this book. Harvard did a study. They took took a bunch of guys who were like 80 years old, and they put them on a five-day retreat up in a monastery in New Hampshire, and they had them pretend they were 22 years younger, right? So they had all the old Life magazines out, and they had videotapes, the TV. They could watch the old newscasts, watch the old TV shows. The music they listened to was all like Smoke on the Water and Ziggy Stardust. It was all 22. And then they did like body scans on these people and everything, and their bodies were 22 years younger. I am not making this up. They put themselves in the headspace of when they were 20. They pretended to be 20 years younger, and then they did the, you know, the blood work and the cholesterol and the, you know, whatever else, all the, you know, the gizmos and the readings, and they found their bodies actually de-aged. So there you go. Keep playing that music, John.
You'll get younger. And what did you get, Ziggy? What was
Ziggy
that?
Ziggy Stardust, David Bowie.
Ziggy Stardust. Oh my God, that is David Bowie.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I saw that concert. I saw him on his original Ziggy Stardust tour.
David Bowie.
Winterland, San Francisco.
Remember, I used to listen to – I remember one of my first dates we played I was like a sophomore in high school. Like a real date, you know, where you got to have a chaperone. And we played we played Peter – Frampton something. I forget what the song is. Peter Frampton. Peter Frampton.
Oh, my gosh. Where he played every the big thing was he played every instrument on the album.
Who is this?
Like, multi-tracked, right?
Peter Frampton,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He was a good artist. Okay, let's get to Trump calls for Barr to do an investigation. The laptop gets to the FBI. Now, we can all say, why didn't the FBI do anything earlier? But now they have it. They have the laptop. It's 13 days out. What happens?
Well, what happens is, so now Catherine Herridge from CBS, used to be over at Fox, great national security reporter, was all over the Russia hoax, all over the, you know, Peter Strzok and all that nonsense going on at the FBI. She is now over at CBS, and she, too, has confirmed that the FBI has confirmed they have this laptop in their possession. This is not a Russian scam, a Russian hoax. This actually does exist. It really is Hunter Biden's laptop, and the FBI has it. Why the FBI did nothing with this back in November, well, I'm sure Steve Bannon tells you all about it. He's been all over the place on that one, which is they should have done something back in November of last year when they got this. So what happens now is the floodgates have broken, the dam has broken, the floodgates are open. CBS, Major Garrett, Catherine Herridge over at CBS are now reporting on this. They have spoken the unnameable word, which is Hunter Biden laptop, right? They've acknowledged it exists, and this is, in fact, authentic. And so now I think we're going to see a drip, drip, drip of ugly and ugly accusations, ugly emails, ugly revelations from this laptop from hell. And it's going to be it's really weirdly like a replay of 2016 of where Anthony Weiner's laptop changed the dynamic of the race toward the end. And that's what we're going to see again. This laptop, what we're seeing here, these emails of Hunter Biden taking money from foreign interests, setting up bank accounts for himself, getting rich, is just classic Washington swamp and classic government swamp. I worked for the New York State Legislature, the New York State Senate, mm-hmm. 10 years ago. And this is what happens at the state legislature in, I don't know if it happens in Virginia, but it's typical in New York, in New Jersey, in all the corruption swamps, that the family members of the elected legislators become the funnel for money for special interests. They either, now we saw this, you see the campaigns, the electeds set up a campaign fund, and then they hire their relatives, and they pay their relatives $90,000 a year for a campaign that never happens because they have a safe seat they don't even have to campaign for. Or they set up a nonprofit, and the nonprofit gets a state grant. Or the law firm of the brother starts getting state contracts or starts getting – and look, everybody knows somebody who – lives in a town where the town supervisor steers contracts to his favorite friend, who then kicks back some of the money to a private bank account, either of the town supervisor or the town supervisor's sister, or, you know, I mean, that happens every day. You want the road grading contract, you want the street paving contract, you know, pony up some money and you get it. And that's what Hunter Biden's doing here. And there's a story now. It's being exhumed. It's being exhumed. It's being dug up again. Of New York Times ran it, and I think it was 2008, where Hunter Biden was getting paid by the big bank MBNA that's incorporated in Delaware. He's getting paid. He's on retainer for some ridiculous amount of money, while his father is sponsoring the bill that will help the big banks, so that if you go into bankruptcy, you can't write off your credit card debt. You can't write off your student loan debt. Senator Biden is doing this, and his son is getting paid by one of the banks who's going to benefit greatly from the bill that his father's writing. So, I mean, this is how it works in Washington. You know, the old story is, I don't want to see the tax return of a millionaire who ran for office. I want to see the tax return of the elected official who became a millionaire.
While in office.
While in office, right.
Right. Well, I mean, there's so many examples, Mark Warner being one of them, but there's so many examples. Denny Hastert being the prime example. And the guy went to Congress. He had $102 to his name. He was a high school coach, regardless of his other issues that have come out. The guy coached high school. He had no money. Literally, he had $100 in savings when he went to Congress. Came out a multimillionaire. Why? Because he started buying the land of where he knew they were going to put in highways. So he'd buy the land at a dollar, and the government would have to buy it off him for $10, eminent domain. So that's how he made millions and millions of dollars. And, I mean, I could go on and on and on with these stories. I mean, Joe Biden never worked a day in his life ever, and he's a bajillionaire with houses all over the place. How did he get the money? The guy never had a job.
Right. And we don't know what kind of bank accounts. We don't know what kind of bank accounts are set up in the Cayman Islands or somewhere else for his brother, James Biden, who got a contract building houses or something in Iraq. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. And this is the same as George Washington Plunkett. Going back to the 19th century, George Washington Plunkett called it honest graft, right? He was a New York City Tammany Hall corrupt politician, and he did exactly what you described Denny Hastert doing. He bought up land because he knew the city council was going to make it into a park, and then he sold it to the city for a tidy profit, and he called it honest graft. He said there's nothing wrong with this. You seize your opportunity, and you take them. and that's how these guys work. So Peter Schweitzer's written all about it, and it's just typical. It's typical, and that's why this Joe Biden is the picture of a typical corrupt politician. He is the typical swamp creature, and I think that's what we're going to see more of. And you've got, of course, the Chinese influence, which is a whole other thing. But it's hard to say which is the bigger story here. He is manifestly corrupt in a garden variety fashion. Mm-hmm. What he does, everybody else in Washington does. Mm-hmm. Just about everybody else in Washington mm-hmm. does. And unfortunately, and the Chinese Communist Party understands how it works, and that's why they don't have to launch missiles. They don't have to send shiploads of troops to America. Instead, they send shiploads of cash to America, and they buy off everybody in Washington. And they bought Hunter Biden, and they do this all the time. They know you can't buy the politician directly, but you can buy the family of the politician, and it accomplishes the same end. You've effectively bought the politician. Dianne Feinstein's husband has made a fortune investing in China. Henry Kissinger has made a fortune counseling corporations how to invest in China. Then Henry Kissinger advises the government, saying, be nice to China because they will be a very effective ally in dealing with climate change and North Korea and everything else. We must be nice to them. So, you know, Dianne Feinstein's driver was a Chinese communist spy. So, they buy the family members of the government officials they seek to influence. And then, you know, it goes back to the Old Testament, Deuteronomy. Moses laid down the law. God laid down the law to Moses. Do not let judges take gifts because mm-hmm. it clouds their judgment. Mm-hmm. So that was the first rule against bribes. You mm-hmm. cannot bribe officials.
Give us we're with Curtis Ellis. Curtis Ellis, Senior Policy Advisor, America First Policy. Curtis, give us a sense now of where you think this race is. I mean, and I want to just reminisce a little bit so we can put this in perspective. We're going to go back 4 years, 13 days to go. Curtis Ellis in New York at Trump Tower. I was there the final week. Curtis, at the time, we were doing much worse than we are now, as I recall. also, truth be told, among friends here, we were there for a week. There were four people that thought we were going to win. You, me, Ann, who was there with us the whole time, and Andy Sarabian, as I remember. There wasn't another person in that building other than Bannon. He did, so I'll say five, that thought we were going to win, including Kellyanne and everybody else. They were all making plans for the loss. Half the staff in there had their resumes out. So there was only a handful of us. Juxtapose that to now. How do you feel now?
I feel good. I feel I was listening to you before. The momentum is going in the right direction. And that's what we saw in 2016 as well, because I was following the polls every day, the Real Clear Politics average of polls. And even before the laptop, the Wiener laptop thing happened, the polls were going in our direction. The momentum was in our direction. And then that happened, and it just really kept going in the same way. The momentum now is in our direction. And if you look at the Real Clear Politics average of polls, we are closer in Pennsylvania and in the other swing states than we were in 2016 at this point in the race. Mm-hmm. Hillary was ahead by like 6 or 7 points in Pennsylvania. Right now, Biden's only ahead by 4 or 5 points. Mm-hmm. And we have the registration advantage. I am just terribly afraid of voter fraud in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And it was not helped at all by Chief Justice John Roberts allowing the ridiculous ruling by the state Supreme Court of Pennsylvania to stand that would allow the counting of mailed ballots that are received up till Friday, the Friday after Election Day, without a postmark. I mean, this is just insane. How do you have ballot security and you know that the ballot was indeed cast by a real voter before Election Day if you don't have a postmark on it? I mean, this is just insane. So I am deathly afraid. And look, now Obama is making an appearance at a Get Out the Vote rally in Pennsylvania today or tomorrow. The Democrats are focused on Pennsylvania. You look at I was watching Fox News last night, and Brett Baer did his little scenario, and it all comes down to Pennsylvania, and which is an interesting historic parallel that this is what happened in 1860 with Abraham Lincoln, another very fateful election preceding the Civil War. Pennsylvania was the decider. And this could be, again, the situation here. That's what put – if it goes to Trump, that's what will put him over the top. If it goes to Biden, that's what would put him over the top. And now you've got this situation that cannot stand where you could stuff a ballot box the day after Election Day and stuff a mailbox.
The thing is, they're going to know by Friday how many votes they need to steal it. That's why the lawyers are going to get involved. But you're right, Pennsylvania, Stephen Douglas, Abe Lincoln in 1860, right? Stephen Douglas was the Democrat, came down to Pennsylvania. It was a very close race. Many people say had Douglas won that race, there'd be no Civil War. The South would not have seceded. They just didn't like Lincoln. And Douglas would have probably did a lot of the same policies, including abolition over time, a slower process. John Frederick's Radio Network, Curtis Ellis, thanks for being with us. We're out of time.
You're listening to The John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. On great radio stations across Virginia and online anytime at thejohnfrederickshow.com.
John Frederick.
So I go to North Carolina for a baseball tournament. It's like I'm in New York City. Streets are empty. No bars open. People are freaked out over this mask thing. I was pumping gas, and a guy comes out and says, sir, you have to put your mask on. I'm like, I'm pumping gas. So they got a person they hire telling everybody to put a mask on pumping gasoline.
The John Frederick Show. Listen all around the world with the new John Frederick Show app, available in the Apple Store and Google Play.
This is insane, man. I don't know when people just stand up and say they've had enough.
October 24th, 1945. Birth of the United Nations. The Charter of the Global Organization takes effect nearly 2 months after the Japanese surrender ending World War II. 1952. Dwight Eisenhower promises to bring the Korean War to an end. The Republican candidate for president makes his pledge on the campaign trail.
Only in that way could I learn how best to serve the American people in the cause of peace. I shall go to Korea.
Eisenhower wins the presidential election and visits Korea over a month later. 2002. In Maryland, authorities arrest two people in connection with weeks of deadly sniper attacks in the Washington, D.C. area. They catch John Muhammad and Lee Malvo after the series of shootings kills 10 people and wounds 3. Muhammad is sentenced to death in Virginia and life in prison in Maryland. Malvo gets a life sentence in both states. 2003. The supersonic Concorde makes its last transatlantic trip, concluding 27 years of commercial service. Three of the luxury passenger jets land at Heathrow Airport outside London, all arriving from New York's John F. Kennedy Airport. 2005. Civil rights activist Rosa Parks dies. In 1955, Parks made a simple decision that sparked a revolution. When a white man demanded she give up her seat on a Montgomery, Alabama bus, the then 42-year-old seamstress said no. Her act of defiance earned her the title Mother of the Civil Rights Movement. Parks was 92. And 1991. Gene Roddenberry, creator of the sci-fi TV series Star Trek, dies in Santa Monica, California. He was 70. Today in history, October 24th, Carlotta Bradley, The Associated Press.